Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Right Stream Radio Network, rejoicing in the flow of creativity. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at RightStream and hashtag RightStream. Thanks for listening to the Right Stream Radio Network.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Right Stream Tuesday. This is your host, Daria Ann, and I want to thank you for joining me today. I've got another great show and guests lined up, and I'm going to bring him on the air here in just a few moments after a proper introduction. But first, for those of you who don't know who I am, my name is Daria Ann. I am the founder of the Right Stream Radio Network and also an independent blogger, author, social media marketer, editor, and, of course, internet radio host, as well as ghostwriter. I should not neglect to throw that in there because I'm in the final phases of a project that I'm very excited about. And the network, Right Stream Radio Network, was founded last March of 2013, so we're coming up on our first year anniversary, and I'm just really thrilled with the growth that we've experienced this past year. So I just want to tell you a little bit about our other hosts quickly. We have Lisa Tarvez, who hosts a program called Just Believe every Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern. Lisa is a certified holistic health practitioner, a metaphysician, an author, and of course, a host here on Right Stream Radio Network. And her show, Just Believe, covers a wide variety of topics within the boundaries of paranormal, spirituality, and holistic health. And she's just doing an outstanding job and brings on really interesting guests every week. This past week, in case you missed the program, her guest was Carol Shimp, an author of a book called Love from the Other Side. And that was a very interesting interview. Whether you're a skeptic, you know, if you're a psychic skeptic or a disbeliever or you really love the paranormal and you're really into all that stuff, I think you'll enjoy this week's episode and all of Lisa's episodes because they're definitely thought-provoking. So check out Just Believe with Lisa Tarvez every Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern. And then on Mondays, I'm very honored to have author, military historian, and journalist, and also game designer, let me not neglect to mention that, John D. Gresham, as the host of Military Monday, and that airs every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. John also is doing a fabulous job as host, and this past week he had on author and artist Eric Simonson to talk about military aviation, but sort of also military aviation that I guess never came to be, but could have been. Very interesting interview this past week. As all of John's interviews are. And if you missed that one or any of our RightStream programs, you can go to blogtalkradio.com/RightStream to listen to any of our archives. I just want to give John and Lisa a shout out because they were my two original hosts that joined me in this little venture last year. And so we started with three programs, Just Believe, Military Monday, and of course RightStream Tuesday, which is hosted by me, and where I get to bring on really talented authors in a variety of genres, but mainly with a focus on independent authors. I do interview occasionally traditionally published authors, but I think my heart is really in interviewing those who kind of think outside of the box and who have taken a leap of faith and taken advantage of all this wonderful new technology we have to go independent and find their audience and find their success without the restraints, I would say, of a traditional publishing house. So, I'm really looking forward to author Chris Baker's interview today, and we will be getting to that here momentarily. Just want to tell you, Wednesday nights, we air a program called Family Power Hour at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Call-in format, a show that's just designed not to give advice, but just to be sort of a support system to guide listeners through various life challenges. And that's hosted by Dr. Billy Eisenberg, a licensed clinical psychologist, and family law attorney Sheena Benjamin Wise. Last week, the host had on a realtor, local realtor here in Boca Raton, to talk about the psychology of home ownership. And this coming Wednesday, tomorrow night, they're going to be talking about foreclosure myths and truths. So those are both very timely topics. So I hope you'll tune in tomorrow night for the foreclosure episode. And if you missed last week's episode, again, blogtalkradio.com/RightStream, and you can listen to Archives of Family Power Hour. And finally, on Friday nights, Lisa Tarvez and her lovely daughter, Kristen Fetterman, and me host a program called Love Liberty, and Lip Gloss. And that's our women's lifestyle show where we get to do fun things and some serious things, but we always have fun doing it. We interview all kinds of great women, whether they're authors, whether they're women that help us navigate through things like dealing with difficult people, whatever their area of expertise is, skincare, fashion, home decor, relationships, we've got it covered. Last week we had a fascinating interview with an author called named Dale Stanton, who wrote a book called The Hooker's Daughter, and it's her memoir. And I have to tell you, Dale gave me a renewed appreciation for my own traditional upbringing, but also a genuine respect and appreciation for her and what she's been able to overcome in her life. As well, and just she's a living example of the triumph of the human spirit, the individual, to be able to overcome. So if you missed that interview, check it out by visiting us here at Rightstream on Blog Talk Radio. You can also visit our website, rightstreamradio.com, and there, when you go there, you'll find all of our social media sites, and you can follow us on Twitter and like our Facebook page and all of that good stuff. All right, everyone. Well, without any further ado, let me go ahead and introduce Chris. And then I'm going to go ahead and bring him on the air. It's funny, I mentioned the triumph of the human spirit when I was talking about our guest last week on Love, Liberty, and Lip Gloss. And that's actually one of the themes of Chris's book, sort of the triumph of the human spirit against really very challenging odds, to put it mildly. His book is called Escape from the Village, and it's a sci-fi dystopia. And I'm going to read, he's got wonderful reviews on Amazon, mostly 5-star, and I'm just going to read a brief one and then read a brief bio of Chris, and then we're going to bring him on the air, and we're going to let him tell us all about himself and his book in his own words. So, Escape from the Village by author Chris Baker. An 11-year-old girl and boy live in an isolated village with 258 other citizens. Nobody has a name, and everything is calculated to break their spirits so that they surrender to an existence of gray routine. But they have each other. They each have a passion, music and art, and a mysterious force is guiding them and protecting them. When the savagery of those in control finally transforms the girl, the boy must help her find herself again. The path is an amazing journey through which they discover the depths of their humanity and a startling method to shake the village at its roots. Perhaps they can shift the world toward happiness. Escape from the Village is a homage to true friendship, which can sustain the human spirit even against physical and spiritual torture. It is a touching love story like no other. And that review was written by Wendy McElroy. And just to tell you a little bit about and a synopsis of the book, she draws the pictures, he makes the music. They both share a big secret. There is no music or art in the village where a pre-adolescent boy and girl live. They go to a mysterious house where they make music and art, while other citizens cannot go there. Their creativity separates them from their peers in many ways. They will soon discover that there is much more being kept from them. Take the grim dystopia of the Hunger Games and combine it with the charm of Moonrise Kingdom, and the result is Escape from the Village. And here's a bit about the author from his Smashwords bio. Chris Baker was born and raised in the northern panhandle of West Virginia and currently lives in Austin, Texas. He has also lived in Northwest Washington and Columbus, Ohio. He has been published in a wide range of publications and is writing novels again. He also takes acting classes and is a senior green belt in Taekwondo. So once again, I have a multi-talented author and artist here on Rightstream Tuesday, and I'm very honored to welcome Chris Baker to the program. Hi, Chris.
Thank you very much. That was a wonderful introduction. Of course, I have to...
My pleasure. Chris, you with us? I know, poor Chris. Ladies and gentlemen, I should have explained, too, that Chris is, you know, I'm also really appreciative that he's here with a sore throat.
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear. I can hear you.
Okay, I'm sorry about that. Yeah, okay, yeah. Okay, just needed to hold the microphone up closer. Yeah.
Before we get into the book, tell us a little bit more about yourself, because you have such an interesting background.
Well, thank you. I've always had interest in a lot of creative pursuits. I was, and you know, I'm 42 years old now, and I had initially created my characters over 20 years ago, and that was back in the days of self-addressed stamped envelopes. I mean, it's a completely different world now. You know, and I think like a lot of authors, after just sending out all these query letters and not getting anything back more than form letters, I just kind of gave up. And finally, after seeing what's been going on with Amazon and electronic publishing, I thought, geez, I'd be crazy not to do this. I mean, it's certainly something I encourage anybody to do. If you think there's a book inside you, you know, go out there and get it out there. It's harder than you think it'll be, and you'll have to make a lot more decisions than you ever thought you'd have to make. But in the end, it's definitely worth it.
Yeah, I agree, Chris. So I'm assuming now from that you see the new technology as a really net positive for aspiring authors.
This is the best time ever in the world to be a novelist. I mean, novelists are making more money than they ever have. I mean, you know, if you walk into Simon & Schuster or Random House, and you know, the chances that they even look at your manuscript at all is 1 in 100. But even if they give you a deal, they'll probably give you 10%. You go on Amazon, you get 70. You go on Smashwords, you get 85. You go on most of the others, you'll get at least 60. I mean, authors now are making more money than ever. And a lot of the authors who have been legacy published have acquired some of their backlists. Their books that are out of print, but, you know, so they've re-released them as e-books, and they're finding out that they're making more money off their old books than they are off their current books. It's really amazing what's happening right now.
Yeah, it's incredible. The publishing industry has been completely transformed, and I'm thrilled. As you're saying, I mean, I agree with you. It's been just it's leveled the playing field. And it's allowed for so much more creativity because, Chris, what I've been finding, you know, as I've been interviewing authors, that there's so much talent out there. It's incredible to me. And, and this kind of relates to your book, too, you know, the creativity that's within so many individuals. And when that's allowed to freely express itself without the restrictions of an editor who may have an agenda, you know, that's another thing with some of these traditional publishing houses. If there's a book like yours that's celebrating individuality and freedom and kind of slamming the idea of a massive centralized government, they might not be so quick to want to publish that. So that's kind of my segue into, let's get back to talking about Escape from the Village. And, you know, you mentioned that you formulated these characters years ago. So tell us a little bit about the evolution of the book and perhaps maybe how it related to how things were playing out in real life on the political scene.
Well, I first discovered Ayn Rand back in 1992, and in some ways my novel is kind of a kid's version of Anthem, but I like to think there's a lot more to it than that, and I am already working on a sequel to this novel because I wanted to give my readers a happy ending, but I also wanted to leave it open for more to go on. I think my book would be very easy to place because it's very hard to categorize. You know, I can't really put it into categories. I tell people, or readers have said to me, that it's like The Giver by Lois Lowry or A Wrinkle in Time by Madeline Lingell. And those are books that you really can't classify. And the other thing, I don't necessarily want to classify my books because it seems like people nowadays are also breaking out of the mold of what they are supposed to read. I mean, it is amazing how many adults now are reading kids' books. You've got people who are in their 40s reading The Hunger Games. I mean, I read The Hunger Games. I read all three in 9 days. You know, they're great books, and I'm certainly not what would be considered the target audience for those books.
Right.
I think it started with Harry Potter because, you know, lots of adults have read Harry Potter, and I think it's moved on to that. And it's interesting, too, because I think there is a parallel for this in history. The popularity of kids' books with adults is, you go back and look at the popularity of Shirley Temple in the 30s. Shirley Temple was an escape because you had a horrible economy and people just didn't want to have to deal with all that, so they go to the movie and they watch Shirley Temple. We've had a horrible economy for what, 12 or 13 years now, you know, and people are, yep. I think people are going into kids' toys to escape from that.
Absolutely.
You know, so it's, yeah. So
yeah, I think in the case of Shirley Temple, she was like a reminder that life can still be good and happy, and that there's, you know, it gave people a sense of optimism. So with your book, I mean, Chris, you know, with what's going on now and the importance of really all of us affecting the culture as artists and writers, what was your goal when you wrote Escape from the Village? You obviously wanted to entertain your readers, but go ahead.
Well, first of all, I've always wanted to write books about smart kids because, and my kids are smart, you know, not only is the girl an artist, the boy's the girl's an artist, the boy's a musician, but they're doing high school trigonometry, and they're much too young to be doing that. And that's one thing I always love to write stories about girls who are really good at math, because that's against the stereotype. I also wanted to create a really powerful love story, which I think I've done that, because we're very much at a point where I think people don't really seem to believe in love anymore. It's kind of unfortunate, but they don't. You know, when you just see people not getting married, and, you know, I'll admit I'm 42 and single myself, so I understand how that feeling goes too, and you just want to have something that makes you believe in love, and that's one of the things why I mentioned the movie Moonrise Kingdom. I love that movie because there is no movie that that will make you believe in love more than that movie. And believe me, if Wes Anderson, the director of Moonrise Kingdom, ever wants my book, he's got it. I mean, he is my dream director if it ever gets to that.
Well, I'm pulling for you. I hope it does. I mean, I didn't have a chance to finish the book just because I've moving this weekend and just had more things going on than I anticipated. But I have to tell you, it's heartbreaking, even from the beginning, that these kids are, you know, they're given numbers, you know, and like a letter and a two-digit number or a three-digit number that, you know, instead of a name. And I think, you know, that hit me right away when I opened the book. And yet there's still this spark of just humanity and creativity within each of them. And I just, you know, it kind of hooked me in from the beginning, and I really can't wait to finish it. But, you know, and as far as love, I just have to say I agree with you. I think we've become very cynical as a culture, and there's probably a lot of reasons for that that would take a three-hour interview. But I'm happy to hear you say that, because I love to see, you know, the human emotions of love and concern for other people and individuality and strength and courage celebrated in fiction.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to – I think you need to put that into fiction, because you still need to uplift people and give people something to shoot for. I mean, I hope that a girl would read this book and say, I want to have a boyfriend like this. And if a boy reads it, I want him to say, I want to have a girlfriend like this. Because it gives people something to believe in. And the other thing I tried to emphasize in love is that, you know, these two kids are in love, but there is definitely a difference between them, and they celebrate their differences. They accept their differences, and they're happy that they're not exactly the same. You know, the fact that she draws all these pictures and she's very visual, and he likes to make music, and his brain is very auditory. And, you know, the brain type of auditory and visual is a match that you would never expect to work, but it does.
Yes, and that's another great point, because in our society today, I think we don't celebrate differences among people. It's like we want to pretend that they don't exist, when that's one of the things that makes life so interesting and something to celebrate are the differences between people and the unique gifts that each individual has here on this planet.
Well, and above all is the differences that, you know, males and females are different, and that's why we need each other. You know, if we were exactly the same, we wouldn't need each other.
Yeah, absolutely. And then that's another thing, too. I think that, you know, liberty and equality have sort of been, those terms have sort of been distorted in this rush to, you know, to sort of disavow the differences between men and women. in our culture. So I'm happy to see a book like yours kind of celebrating those differences and acknowledging them, because they do exist. You're absolutely right. And that's great. You know, it's a good thing, like you said.
Well, yeah, and I don't think liberty, you know, it's like, you know, Lord Acton once said about the French Revolution, the greatest opportunity in the world was thrown away because the desire for equality made vain the hope for freedom. You know, he said that about the French Revolution, and that's kind of what happened there.
Yeah.
You know, people are always going to be different, and you know, as long as we, you know, the point is that we need to have equality before the law, you know, but that doesn't necessarily mean that we are going to have equal outcomes. That doesn't
exactly
mean, you know, that I'm going to, you know, obviously Peyton Manning should get paid more money than some guy who sits on the bench, you know, because he's, you know, Peyton Manning's a great quarterback and some guy who sits on the bench isn't, you know, I don't, and that doesn't necessarily, you know, we all have different talents, and I think there's, you know, there's enough for everybody. And that's another thing that's made, you know, made America such a great nation is America has always been a nation of creators. You know, people like Benjamin Franklin flying his kite or Thomas Edison inventing his light bulb or his phonograph. That's our history. That's what's made us such a powerful country, is because we've allowed these creative people to flourish and we've benefited from all of their creations.
Absolutely. And, you know, we seem to have lost in this country another thing that, you know, was founded upon, and this is related, you know, self-reliance and, you know, and like you said, celebrating human achievement. We seem to have lost that now in our current culture, and it's sort of where, you know, the powers that be, for their own self-interest, instead of pointing at someone who's successful and saying, look at this person and what they were able to accomplish with initiative and drive and determination, they point to that person and say, this person is taking money from you. This person is evil. Meanwhile, of course, you know, we've got millionaires in the Senate who don't produce anything, living high off the hog, and it frustrates me that so many people fall for that and sort of, you know, and have lost that whole idea of, hey, you know what, I'm here, I'm free. Like you said, it's not equality of outcome, it's equality of opportunity, and to give thanks to have that opportunity to fail, to succeed and fail, because that's life. I mean, you know, these are life lessons that we all have to learn.
Yes, and unfortunately you can't have success without failures, but you know, the beauty of a free economy though is that eventually, you know, you don't ever have equality, but you have a situation in which everybody gets richer. I mean, the poorest people today are richer than most of the people who were alive 200 years ago. And,
right.
You know, they're and of course, and above all, they're living a lot longer. You know, it's and even the poorest people in America are richer than most people living in Africa. You know, you never flatten out the curve, but you can shift the curve. You know, and I hope that continues, and I think it will. I think it's the nature of progress because, you know, birds build nests the same way that they did thousands of years ago. We are always improving on how we do things. We get better. We learn from the mistakes that were made by people in the past. At least most of the time we do, and we build better cars. We build better houses. We figure out ways to cure diseases. It's that's the nature of human progress and how we have so much knowledge and information now that, I mean, we're really, you know, there's really no limit on what we can do as long as we just let ourselves do the things that people do best.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and there's that expression, a rising tide lifts all boats, and that's so true. And, you know, I'd rather be, I mean, you know, all you have to do is look at history. I mean, you study the history of communism, for example. Yeah, they were all equal, you know, not the people at the top, but certainly the people suffering under communism, they were all equal in their misery. So I'd much rather, I mean, here we live in a country where poor people have iPhones. And so you're absolutely right. I mean, even the poorest among us here are still so much better off than their counterparts in other parts of the world. So, and I think that's an important thing to remember. And Chris, with fiction, though, how important do you feel it is to be able to entertain people while informing them?
Well, I think you have to keep people inspired and entertained. Definitely, if people realize it's a sermon, they're not going to listen. You know, they can go to church if they want a sermon. And, you know, it's not something so... But, you know, at the same time, you know, there are always people that are going to be open to the message. I mean, I wrote my novels to try to, you know, get to the people who don't necessarily agree with me. You know, if I just wrote them for people who already agree, I don't think it's going to sell very many. So, and my goal is to try to get out to as many people as possible. So.
And so, Chris, what has been the reaction, the response to Escape from the Village?
It's been good so far. I mean, I'm pretty happy with what people have said. I mean, I've got, you know, some good reviews. I mean, I still haven't sold that many, but, and I'm still, you know, really working on my marketing plan, not to mention I'm still working on the print version. It's out on all the sites, though. I mean, Barnes & Noble, Apple, Kobo, Google, you know, you can get it on all the major ebook sites. But, yes, I've still been working on that, and I really do need to get my marketing up and running. But that's the beauty of ebooks, is my book is always going to be there. And maybe it'll take on a life of its own without me doing anything, but I don't think so. I'm going to have to get out there and push it.
Absolutely.
My sequel.
And that's one of the things I always talk to every author about, you know, in this age of social media, you know, how they market their book. Because, you know, it's one of the challenges is, just like you said, is, okay, now I've written this great book, and now I've got to tell the world about it, and we have all these new tools at our disposal. Plus, you know, I never discount the old-fashioned, if you will, methods of, you know, getting out in your local community and speaking at libraries and book clubs and various events, because people, I mean, I found in my experience, and I want to ask you this question, tend to be just as interested in the author and how they went about the process of writing and publishing their book as they are in the book itself. Have you found that to be true, Chris?
I don't really know if that's true, but there is something, you know, there was a TED video where a guy said, people don't necessarily buy what you do, they buy why you do it. So I think there is some truth to that. And yes, of course, another thing too is, you know, for getting a real book out there is so I can go to sci-fi conventions. I don't really want to become a bookstore, but you know, science fiction conventions are a good way to get out there and meet people, and you know, you can do, and people are much more likely to buy a book if they can get an autograph. That's one thing that's definitely true.
Yeah. Absolutely. But what about the concept of the quote unquote local author? So you live in Texas and in the Austin area. I mean, what do you make of the tactic of, okay, let me kind of bloom where I'm planted, so to speak, and maybe speak to different audiences in your local community as the, you know, Chris Baker local author? Do you think there's some merit in that?
Oh yes. I mean, Austin is a very creative city. It's got a very high rate of, I mean, it's very high in the rate of people who buy books and read books. So Austin's a very good city for that, you know. And, you know, like I said, you know, I mentioned I take acting classes. That's another pretty big creative outlet here. And, you know, and acting classes will definitely help your writing, because it helps you feel things and helps you act things out and think about how things would feel. You know, lots of, you know, there are a lot of artists, lots of musicians here. It's just, lots of creative people here, so it definitely helps to get out among them too. So, social media, I the best source for that's probably Goodreads. I've got to say, I think Facebook is in trouble right now. It's definitely not where it was a couple of years ago, and especially among the under 25 crowd, they are not using Facebook like they used to.
Yeah, that is definitely true. Although I have to say, I just, you know, when you reminded me, you mentioned Facebook, I want to give a shout out to the Conservative Libertarian Fiction Alliance, which is how I met you, and so many fantastic authors, and I've got myself booked through April, and now I'm working on May just because of being involved with them, and I just want to thank them for all that they do. But I have to agree with you, you know, I have not until recently really taken advantage of Goodreads and gotten in there, and I think for authors and readers, that's probably, I mean, what do you think of that site? Let me ask you your opinion. I mean, do you think in terms of connecting with your readership and ultimately selling books that Goodreads is probably the best platform for writers?
That's going to be what I'm going to try to do, because I'm going to try to go out and maybe talk to some people who like The Giver and like A Wrinkle in Time and see what I can do to get more reviews, because I think that's the best way to get my book out there is to get as many reviews as I can get, because if people don't know anything about the book, but they see all these reviews, they'll buy it. And one thing I want to point out, if anybody's listening has a blog or anything, I'll gladly send you a free ebook if you've got a blog or anything like that, because, you know, it's not hard to send out free ebooks. Interestingly enough, too, I found that people still have generally requested PDFs as opposed to the Nook version or a Kindle version. It's funny. So, yeah.
Yeah.
But I will gladly send out free book copies to anybody who wants to post a review.
Well, that's excellent. This is a good opportunity for me to say that, Chris, I am behind on my book reviews, but I will be writing one for Escape from the Village soon, I promise. Because I like to do that for everybody that I bring on the show, and just this project that I'm working on now is just consuming most of my time. But that's excellent, and you're absolutely right. I think, you know, it's kind of like that social proof theory. You know, the more high quality reviews someone reads about a particular book, the more intrigued, the more interested they're going to be in reading it. So I definitely agree with you on that.
Definitely, that's how it goes. And the other thing, too, is I think your advertising comes up, you know, because on Amazon it'll say, people who bought this book also bought this, you know.
Yeah.
That'll be your best advertising when it goes viral. So, yeah.
Absolutely. All right, well, Chris, we have a caller on the line, so I'm going to go ahead and bring this person on from the 724 area code. And like I said, I don't have a way of screening, so this will be an adventure for both of us.
Well, 724 is southwestern Pennsylvania, I can tell you that much.
Welcome, caller, to Right Stream Tuesday.
Hello, Daria. It's Harriet Park.
Harriet, how are you, my dear?
I'm good, and it's good to hear another dystopian author doing well.
Fantastic. Well, Chris, this is Harriet Park, the author of Agenda 21.
Harriet, you're from 724. You're from southwestern Pennsylvania, right?
Correct, and it's -3 degrees right now.
Oh, well, I'm from Moundsville, West Virginia originally, so I'm not too far from where you are. So,
where
you
were you? Where were you? West Virginia.
The northern panhandle of West Virginia, so.
Well, it's bitter, bitter, bitter cold, and the polar vortex is sitting on top of my house.
Oh.
Yes.
But congratulations on your book. I think your message is wonderful. I hope your sore throat gets better. And I just wanted to say hello to another dystopian author.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, Chris, Harriet has a...
I'm back up there for Christmas. Maybe we can meet up. So, yeah.
Could you say that again?
I'm sorry.
What did Chris just say?
I said, well, when I'm back in the northern panhandle, I don't think you're that far away. Maybe we could meet up for lunch or something. You never know.
We could sign each other's books, yes.
Yes.
And, you know, Chris, if you'll allow me, I just have to give a plug for Harriet, because her book, Agenda 21, was published with Glenn Beck, and it's phenomenal. And, Harriet, do you have a sequel coming out soon? Let me just give you an opportunity.
Glenn did put on his Twitter feed that he read my sequel, and we're going to start the editing process very soon.
Excellent. Well, keep me posted. I'm really excited about that.
Well, I'm going to let you go back to your author, Chris. Good luck with your book. I think you're on the right track, and I hope we can sign each other's books someday.
Well, I just looked you up, Harriet. It's certainly an honor to have you call in. You got 1,200 five-star reviews.
I know. It was amazing. It was an amazing adventure, and it was just wonderful. And because of that book, I met Daria, and she's my friend now, so that was another bonus. That was another five-star.
Aw, well, I feel the same way.
Okay, Daria.
Pardon
me?
Well, congratulations.
Thank you. And I'll talk to you later, Daria.
Thank you, Harriet. Look forward to it.
Uh-huh, bye-bye.
Stay warm. Okay, bye-bye. All right, Chris, yes, and that was the wonderful Harriet Park. I'm so glad she called in. But, yeah, you know, Chris, it seems like, you know, these dystopian novels are becoming more and more popular. Do you find that to be true?
Oh, that seems to be the case. I think maybe people are a little afraid of where we're going, and they don't want to go there. You know, it's not I do wish there was a little more optimism in science fiction now, but but I think we're also seeing that maybe people realize we are kind of headed in the wrong direction, and now we just need to figure out a way to get back on track. And I think we can do that. But it's going to take some work. And I certainly, I do have a lot of optimism, especially when I, talk to the next generation now. The kids are in college, even the kids are in high school. And the kids are in high school nowadays. I mean, they're infinitely smart as I ever was when I was in high school.
Well, that is certainly that's good to hear, and that's certainly hopeful. So I'm glad to hear you say that. And I do find that with my nieces and nephews as well. And I also think that more and more parents, and I'm not necessarily more and more parents are homeschooling. Now my nieces and nephews all go to school, but they have parents who are active at home in sort of guiding them and helping them to ask critical questions and learn from history and learn proper history. And I do think that's just an integral part of raising patriots, kids who understand that freedom isn't free. And when you look at history, and this is my next question for you, Chris, because I want to ask you how much research went into your book to be able to create it. You must have been a history buff because you have to really understand what has gone before us, what has happened. And I'm just going to say this, and then I'm going to let you jump back in here. I think we've lost, and I hope it's coming back, but we've lost the concept of what makes America exceptional. I mean, here we had a group of very courageous men on pain of death and hanging and losing everything they owned, saying, you know what, we're going to draw a line in the sand here. And even though we're coming from a world of oligarchies and monarchies and dictatorships and all kinds of central control, we're going to declare our independence and we're going to create a system of government where the individual is the master of their own destiny and where government is going to be necessarily limited because it has to be. So I think we've lost that whole concept. So I'm glad to hear you say you think that the younger generation is smarter and perhaps they have a better understanding of that. I mean, do you find that to be the case?
I do to a certain extent, and one thing you should also point out is those guys threw tea in the harbor over a tax that was 3%. 3%. But I do find that because one thing that's definitely a trend among the younger people is they want to get out and volunteer. They want to get out and help others. But then you ask them if they want to do anything with the government. It's like, are you kidding? But they still believe in going out and helping people and maybe volunteering at a soup kitchen or a blood drive or something like that. It's, we and that's really what community is.
Mm-hmm.
It's getting out, just getting out and helping somebody on the street or something like that. It's not about just, giving your money giving your money to other people and letting them do the job. It's about getting out there and doing it yourself. I hope we can get back to that. This was long before I was born, but my great grandmother had this little book, and she was actually a widowed mother in the early 1900s, having 11 kids, and she was widowed, and there was a case where her barn caught on fire, and all these people came over and brought her stuff just to give her, here, do you need this, just to help out, because she had the misfortune of her barn catching on fire. And, I just thought that was great, the whole spirit of community, and she was a widowed mother with 11 kids, which obviously, but before women could even vote, obviously it wasn't easy for her, but, she managed to, overcome that and raise her kids and,
Well, individual charity is another sort of another bedrock of this country, and that was something certainly that, when the country was founded was prevalent. I mean, people believed in individual charity and giving of yourself. I mean, it's very easy. I think, people who believe in this massive overreaching centralized government, they just figure if they vote a certain way, they don't have to get off their butt and do anything. And even though all that's doing is creating more poverty and misery for the people they think it's helping, and it doesn't work, and history proves that, that's their mindset. And it takes a true, I think, Chris, there's a book out of several years ago called Who Really Cares by Arthur C. Brooks, professor, and he did his research, and he found out that, people who believe in limited government, constitutional conservatives outgave people who believe in bigger centralized control by, I think it was a margin of like 3-1, because And getting back to that whole concept of community and individuals helping individuals, you know, families, churches, private charities, support groups, helping individuals. That's how it gets done effectively.
Yeah, you know, and I'm not religious at all, but churches have done very good at that. You know, they've always done that, and I think it's because, you know, churches also tend to give a hand up, not just a hand out. You know, they'll try to help you out. If you got a problem, they'll try to help you solve it, you know. And, you know, a lot of times the problems are, you know, it's not just, you know, we've all got problems, you know, and of course nowadays too, you know, if you try to give food to a homeless person, they'll say, you can't give them food because that's not, you know, up to standards or something. You hear these cases where people like to start to cook soup or something for the homeless people and the do-gooders come in and stop them. It's
insanity.
You know, actually making private charity difficult. It's kind of ridiculous.
Yeah. Oh,
you know,
it's crazy.
People do want to help people if they really are victims of bad luck. And, you know, and a lot of times people just are victims of bad luck. I mean, anytime I meet somebody who's looking for work, I will try to help them in some way. I mean, I'll say, you know, I've got a job, and say, look, send me your resume. I'll pass it on to here, you know, just to help them out, you know, just, you know, because I just think that's what you want to do. And that, because I want people to do that for me when I'm in that position, you know. And I think that's another thing, too, though, that's kind of happened to us. We've gotten to a point where we don't look 10 years ahead. We just look 10 minutes ahead. And one reason also is I think we don't trust the future as much. We can't really depend on anything being there 10 years from now. We don't know, you know, our employer might say to us, yeah, you'll have a job 10 years from now, and then a month later they shut down the company. It's just, it's gotten to a point where I think we just don't really feel like we can have much predictability or feel like we can depend on much of anything anymore, and I think that's not a good thing. But it also makes us tend to look more into the moment instead of look down the road into the future. I think that's another thing, you know, really a theme of my novel is when you have kids who are just around people their own age, you don't think about the past or you don't think about the future. You know, when I talk to kids, I can think about the future. When I talk to my people or my parents' age, I can see what the past is like. So I have a link to the past and to the future. And I think that's important for us to have, too.
Yeah, oh, I agree. So, Chris, what are the takeaways that you're hoping readers will get from Escape from the Village?
I hope that they'll believe more in love, and I hope that they'll understand that, you know, we can still love each other in spite of differences, and that we can actually celebrate those differences, and that we can, but above all, I hope they understand that the best education is still a self-directed one. You know, you mentioned homeschooling earlier. I'm a passionate advocate of that, and the ironic thing about the homeschooling movement too is it was started by the hippies. You know, there are a lot of
really?
Christian conservatives doing it now. Yes. In the 70s. In the 70s, yes. I mean, they're really the ones who went out and fought all the big court battles. It didn't really become religious until the 80s. I mean, they were the ones who really knocked down a lot of the barriers that opened up since then. It's really, you know, and there are still some out there. It's really a pretty remarkable story of how that worked out. You know, it's one of those things I will say for Christian conservatives, when they see a good idea that was started by somebody else, they'll grab it and take it as their own.
Well, yeah, I think it's also a reaction to a centralized control over something that really in the Constitution is not any business of the federal government. And the problem becomes that instead of teaching kids life skills and teaching them to think for themselves, they're purposely kind of dumbing them down and creating, you know, wards of the state. They want them to be dependent. And also they're usurping the moral authority of parents as well, you know, teaching kids things that they really don't need to know about when they're 6 years old. And that should be the domain of parents, you know, whether it's sexuality, homosexuality, whatever it is. I mean, you know, that is not a the social engineering that's going on in schools, I think, is another reaction by whether you're a Christian conservative or somebody who just believes in limited government, or you just want to teach your kids, you know, the right values, you know, according to your conscience. And I mean, you know, the Ten Commandments or whatever have you, you know, very to raise your kids with moral clarity, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And that's just not happening purposely. Just on a political front, I mean, do you believe that issue should go back to the states in terms of, you know, the issue of education?
Well, I'd like to see it totally private, but certainly local would be better. You know, in my own case, you know, I mean, when I went into kindergarten, I already knew how to read. I knew my addition, subtraction, and multiplication tables. I was so far ahead of the other kids that I was bored. And believe me, that is torture for any child. You know, I mean, that's, you know, I will, you know, when I have kids, my kids will very likely be ahead of their peers, and I don't want them to get held back. So if my kids want to do, you know, trigonometry when they're 10 years old, I'm going to let them do trigonometry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's, you know, I think that's great. That's one thing you find a lot. And, you know, one thing that seems to be common amongst almost all homeschoolers is they've got their kids on a second language at a young age. You know, it's something that you can't do in, you know, in the public schools until you're probably, you know, an eighth grader or a freshman now.
Yeah.
You know, there are so many things you can do nowadays. I think, you know, because I don't think you want your kids to have to. I don't want my kids to have to wait on other people. Not to mention, I think people have different learning styles. I knew how to read, but one thing is, I read much better out loud than I do quietly, which is something you can't really do in school. I mean, when I take acting classes, I will take a script and learn my lines, and I'll learn them by just reading them over out loud. If I had to read lines quietly, I would never learn them. But because I engage the auditory section of part of my brain as well as my visual, I can learn that stuff. Everybody has a different learning style. It's just realizing that we're all unique, you know. And you know, the greatest story about homeschooling, of course, is that of Edison. I mean, they said he was retarded, and they threw him out, and you know, he went out and did all this stuff that. You know, and the one guy said, if Edison been formally schooled, he might not have had the audacity to create such impossible things. You know, it's...
Yeah, no doubt.
We're all unique.
Absolutely, and that's one of the beauties of homeschooling, because it celebrates that uniqueness, and it allows each kid to, you know, if they're learning at a fast pace, like you said, if they want to learn trigonometry when they're 10, if they're capable, then let them do it. But, you know, now it's all about conformity in the school system. And so, I absolutely agree with that. Chris, I have another question for you about the book. In terms of, you mentioned that it was an e-book, and is it available in paperback at all, or is it strictly e-book for now?
I'm still working on the paperback version. I've got to get it out there. I know that because I definitely want to get it out there. But I'm still working on that. But yes, I do plan on releasing a paperback version. And I have to admit, next time for my next book, I'm probably going to do all that at once instead of split it up. But it's definitely been a learning experience. But yes, I do need to get a paperback version out there because there are still people who want that. And I've even gotten requests for some review copies from people that would possibly publish a review in something that's kind of big, and they want a lady who wanted to review it for the El Paso Times. She told me she wanted a print copy. I said, okay, well, the El Paso Times, that's pretty big, so yeah, I'll send you a print copy when I get one. So
fantastic.
And, you know, it's funny too, talking about print copies, some bookstores now have what they call this espresso book machine, where you can go into the store and they will print the book right there and bind it on site. I don't think it's necessarily as cheap as some of the mass market books, but it can be done now.
It's amazing.
The machine costs maybe. I know the university co-op has one here. I need to go check that out. But yeah, it's definitely getting interesting.
There's also print on demand. I mean, even with some of these, you know, self-publishing companies, which is fantastic. So you don't have to keep big inventories, and usually they're pretty quick. I mean, I've worked with Lulu in the past, and they've usually, even though they tell you, you know, well, your book will ship out after it's printed up, I mean, it's never taken me longer to receive longer than like 5 days to get a book that I've ordered, which is really great.
Yeah.
And for you, the author, you don't have to, you know, spend all that money on inventory.
Yeah, print on demand is definitely a great thing. You know, that's, I read years ago that, and this was in the 80s, but for a legacy publisher to break even, they had to sell 8,000 books. One thing that's happened now is we've lowered the break-even point. And print-on-demand, of course, is great because the only drawback is for the customers, they cannot get a refund, but they've got to keep the book. But it definitely has lowered the risks for the publisher, and it's made publishing a lot less risky. And I can understand why publishers don't publish everything that gets thrown in their lap, is because obviously there is a risk to publishing books, and I think that's the beautiful thing, is we've lowered the risks and made it cheaper. I mean, for the record, I spent probably about $1,500 of my own money on my book because I hired some editors and some other people to do that. But, I mean, people have certainly done books for as little as $500. It's mm-hmm. definitely doable. And yeah. I've done a lot of stuff on my own, too. I mean, I did my web page. I did my formatting. I hired the cover and I hired my editors. I've done a lot of things that other people have contracted out to. So it depends a lot on how much time you have and on what you want to do. I still have a full-time job, so that makes things a little more challenging. But, yes, it's definitely worthwhile to do that.
Yeah, and you mentioned – go ahead.
Yeah, it's definitely worthwhile to do all that, yeah. And I think print-on-demand is definitely going to be – because the way it is now, you don't just print a bunch of books and then hope they sell. You print books as they're ordered, and there's less risk involved. It's going to be very curious to see what happens if Barnes & Noble does go out of business, because I think that's going to shift the market completely. And I don't know if it will happen soon or if it'll happen – and I don't know if it'll happen all at once or if it'll happen gradually. But most of us in the writing community don't really have much hope for them, unfortunately. Which is sad, because I love books, and anybody who loves books, mm-hmm. Hates to see a bookstore go out of business. But at the same time, it's a model that worked well enough for a long time, and now that there's a better model out there, that model's replacing it. I'm glad to see that model replacing it.
Yeah, I agree. And listen, as long as I can still get paperbacks or hardbacks, I'm happy. Because I love and appreciate Kindle and all the e-readers and all of that and the PDFs and all that, but I have to say there's something about holding a book in my hands, and maybe it goes back to my AP English days when we had to constantly highlight things and write notes in the margin and really dissect a book. But I just love having a book in my hands. I love the way they look in a bookshelf. So I'm glad that with print on demand, even if these bookstores go away, the Barnes and Nobles of the world, with print on demand, as a customer, you can still have a physical book. So I think that's a good thing.
Oh, yes, I definitely think so. Although, I always say that you'll love your books until the next time you move.
Yeah.
I can relate
to that.
I mean, I just remember the last time I moved and how many trips I made to Half Price during that move because I didn't want to move those books. It's unfortunate, but, I wonder where Half Price gets a lot of their inventory, but I bet a lot of their inventory comes from people who are moving and don't want to keep their books.
Trust me, I can relate, having just moved. So, yeah, I mean, boxes and boxes, yeah, it's crazy. But I just don't have the heart to part with any of them. It's insane. But, Chris, earlier you mentioned, and I could relate to this as well, when you were talking about how you're auditory and reading things out loud, you can't do that in school. I find that helps me with the editing process when I'm writing a book, even when I'm writing something as simple as a blog post. Reading out loud, for some reason, allows me to catch mistakes and things that I just can't seem to see when I'm just reading to myself. Very interesting.
I always proofread out loud. There's no other way to go. I mean, I did that when I worked at the magazine, and I wouldn't do it any other way. And still one thing about proofreading. I'm the greatest proofreader in the world for everybody else. But if it's mine, I stink. So, you can never proofread your own stuff, but it definitely – you still have to, though, because I went over my novel probably 9 or 10 times before I finally sent it out to my copy editors.
Yeah. And that's so important, too, because I think even though it's wonderful that we have all this new technology and we can now self-publish, I think that the standards are so much higher for writers like us, so it's critical that you have professional editors and proofreaders that are going to look over your work? Because I just think that you're under more scrutiny if you're self-published still. Do you agree with that, or what do you think about that?
You definitely are, and I do worry sometimes because I've seen a lot of independent publishers who have put out stuff that really hasn't been very well edited, because some of them seem to have this theory of they should just put out as much stuff as possible, and I don't agree with that. I think proofreading, you're showing your readers that you respect them. Not proofreading your novel is like serving somebody a meal and then giving them dirty silverware. It's just, you know, it's just not polite in my view. I don't want people to catch those mistakes. And if people do catch those mistakes, I hope they'll say, hey, I caught this mistake. And that's another great thing, though, is I can go back later and re-upload my corrections if I have to. I think I found one already, you know, just from reading over it. It's, you don't want to do that all the time. And that's the other thing, too, is if you do make a correction, you know, once you log into your Kindle or whatever, it'll say, hey, there's a new version of your book out, and you can re-download it, and it'll fix that. So it's really pretty amazing how this works.
Yeah.
It's definitely a system.
It truly is.
Now, Chris, I'm liking what's happening here.
Chris, do you maintain a blog?
I do not maintain a blog yet. I probably should. I guess I've just always wondered, you know, who's going to read it, but maybe that's not the right way to look at it. But I don't really have a blog out. I should have one, but I guess it's just something I've never really considered a priority. Maybe it's because I wasn't, you know, I don't know what I'd necessarily blog about. It's hard to say what necessarily keeps people interested because, you know, it's maybe something I should do. One thing I should also do is I should put out some more of my other stuff too, some fan fiction I wrote and things like that, just to maybe pick interest. And I need to get some articles out there too so people will see them. That'll get some exposure. You know, there's a lot of ways to get exposure. It's just a matter of getting out there and taking advantage of all of them.
Yeah, very, very true. So Chris, are we going to be seeing you in commercials soon or films or TV?
I don't think so, but I'm going to focus on writing, but you never know. If somebody wants to hire me, I certainly will. You know, I definitely want to get out of my current full-time job and career if I can and get into something more creative because I have a lot of different things that I want to do, and I often say that I have more ideas than I know what to do with. So, and I'm definitely working on some other things. I'm working on a sequel to this novel, and I've working on some other stuff too that might get out there. There's a lot of stuff to do out there, so it's definitely going to be very interesting the next few years to see where things go. I certainly appreciate the time we've had here today. It's been great.
Oh, you're welcome. And Chris, before I let you go, just let everyone know where they can find Escape from the Village if they want to purchase it.
Well, it's on all the major sites. I also have a website, escapevillage.com. That will have a link to all the websites, and also escapefromthevillage.com. Those are both the same sites. My Twitter handle is cbakerauthor, and I'm on Goodreads as well, and I do have a website, chrisbaker.net. I was about a month late at buying .com, so I bought chrisbaker.net. So,
okay.
Yeah, that was in 1999. So.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's where all my stuff is out there. You know, just look for the cover on the novel set. And, you know, that's one thing I definitely will advise to your authors out there. Make your cover red because people will see it.
Yeah, that's an excellent point.
Yeah, that's one thing I told my designer. It's got to be red. So, yeah.
Excellent. Well, Chris, I want to thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule, and I know you're not feeling so great, to join me here for WriteStream Tuesday. It was a pleasure, and lots of success with Escape from the Village and all of your endeavors, and keep me posted on your new project.
Yeah. Well, thank you very well. I'm glad I didn't have to cough, so I'm definitely doing better. I'm on two prescriptions right now, though, so yeah. And of course, I was fine when I scheduled those, which was over a month ago, and I'm glad I kept it because it doesn't sound like I would have gotten rescheduled if I'd asked you to. So thank you very much. It's been great talking to you.
Thanks, Chris. Well, you take care, and I will see you in the CLFA Facebook group and definitely see you on Twitter.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Take care.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that was author Chris Baker. Please check out Escape from the Village. Support local support talented independent authors. I can tell you the book is, so far it's fantastic. I haven't finished it yet, but I definitely will, and I will be posting reviews of Chris's book and all the authors that I'm interviewing this year on my blog, and you can find out more about me at dariadigiovanni.com. For more on the Rightstream Radio Network, please visit rightstreamradio.com. And when you go there, you can find out more about our individual hosts and programs, all of our social media platforms. You can follow us at Rightstream on Twitter and also hashtag Rightstream, Rightstream Radio Network on Facebook. As for me, you can find me on Twitter at Daria Ann. That's D-A-R-I-A-A-N-N-E. You can also like my author page on Facebook. It's Daria Ann Author. And just, please also check out the Conservative Libertarian Fiction Alliance on Facebook. Whether you're a reader or a writer, we welcome you because it's a place for all of us to just kind of communicate and hang out and share current events and talk about books that we've read and things that we enjoy reading, and just a great group of people. We have some very interesting discussions, and I have to tell you, it's really nice to belong to a group where we can disagree on certain things, but do it in a very respectful, thoughtful way, and not have to attack each other. And we talked about during this interview with Chris, how people, if there's a difference of opinion, unfortunately, in our culture today, the other person might automatically be branded a hater or something because they have a different opinion about something. Well, that's one of the refreshing things about this group, is that we can talk about our differences rationally and calmly and respectfully and still like each other at the end of the discussion. So please check that out. Again, I just want to remind everybody, any broadcast that you've missed, you can just visit blogtalkradio.com/rightstream to listen to archives of Just Believe, Military Monday, Rightstream Tuesday, Family Power Hour, and Love, Liberty, and Lip Gloss. And as I mention every week, my buddy John D. Gresham is working on locating a host for a new technology trends show that we're planning on launching in the first quarter. Tentatively, it's going to be scheduled for Saturday mornings, where we're going to talk about all of the wonderful new things coming up in the realm of technology. Not a help desk, mind you, but a forum where we can discuss things like social media and blogging platforms and just the newer things that are coming down the line to make our lives even better. So look for that to launch within the first quarter. I'm going to be speaking with John here soon to kind of firm that up, and I'm really looking forward to adding that show, that program, to our network. Right now we're broadcasting 5 out of 7 days, and our goal is to get to 7. So that we can continue to bring you, our listeners, interesting topics and guests. And we can all learn from each other. So, again, I want to thank everybody for listening today. This is Daria Ann, your host of Rightstream Tuesday, founder of the Rightstream Radio Network, an independent author, blogger, ghostwriter, and editor. Just really appreciate your patronage and your support. And look forward to being back here next week. Gosh, I cannot believe this is the last Tuesday of January. Next week, February 4th, my guest is going to be the wonderful Sarah Hoyt. And I'm just honored that Sarah is able to devote about an hour to joining me here on Rightstream Tuesday. So look for those promos to go up shortly. I'll be posting them everywhere. I'll be talking with Sarah Hoyt next Tuesday, February 4th at 1 p.m. Eastern. Tune into Family Power Hour tomorrow night at 7 p.m. Eastern. That's the next program coming up on Rightstream Radio Network. So until we meet again, everyone, stay warm wherever you are. I'm pretty warm here in South Florida. It's lovely. It's a lovely day today. I'm very thankful to be here. But until we meet again for Rightstream Tuesday, keep rejoicing in the flow of creativity.